Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host, she gets bright shiny object syndrome all the time, Leanne Hughes.
G'day everyone and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you create unpredictable workshop experiences that predictably work. I'd love to welcome you if you're new to the show. If you're an old listener, of course you're welcome as well. I just noticed a lot of you in the last couple of weeks have just discovered the podcast for the first time. I hope you're enjoying it. I hope you're finding it valuable. I hope it's binge-worthy content for you and that you're learning and applying some of the cool stuff that you're hearing on the show. And if you are a long-time listener, again, thank you so much for being here, for keeping the momentum of the show going. So thank you. Last week on the show, we had the rock star of consulting, Alan Weiss. What a fascinating conversation. A lot of people are reaching out to Alan, actually. He told me that he was getting a lot of connections on social media just off the back of that interview. I think it really struck a chord. A lot of the stuff he talks about is pretty provocative, but it also makes a lot of sense, and it's a real masterclass in how to run your facilitation business and market yourself. If you've been listening to the show in the last couple of weeks, you would have heard about a really exciting project I'm working on with Yuri Schilders, the Magic Source. He was on episode 126. We spoke about innovation, and then we were talking after the podcast about collaboration, and we threw ourselves a challenge to collaborate on a brand new program because everyone is saying that it is virtually impossible to recreate face-to-face workshop experiences online. We're here to open that question up and say, hey, well, what if it was virtually possible? So if you'd like to find out more about that program, it kicks off in August. Head on over to firsttimefacilitator.com/possible. That's firsttimefacilitator.com/possible and get on the waiting list. Now let's talk about today's episode. So many times as facilitators, we're asked to come into organizations to solve a specific problem. Now, it could be about communication. I mean, how broad is that? Leadership challenges, absenteeism, decision fatigue, or the inability to make decisions. We're given a lot of challenges. And you know what? A lot of the time, it comes back to the culture of the team, the culture of the organization, and what standards and values have been set. When you start talking about culture, things can get pretty complex, right? Where do you even start? And that's the focus of my conversation today with my guest, Prina Shah. Prina is based in my other favorite Australian city, which is Perth, not Sydney. Everyone thinks it's Sydney. It's Perth. I love WA, Western Australia, for those of you overseas. Anyway, she has over 18 years experience of in-house management roles in the areas of organizational leadership development, human resources, culture change, and change management for companies within the not-for-profit, government, utilities, small business, and private sectors across both London and Australia. Prina is accredited in a variety of tools, including the LSI, DISC, and her specializations include coaching, leadership, and team development, facilitating culture change, and more. Plus, she's also doing something a lot of you probably wish that you could do. She's working part-time for an employer, for a company, and she's also got a cool side hustle happening on the side, of course, as well. Side hustle happening on the side. We connected over Instagram and LinkedIn, and as I mentioned during this interview, I really like the way that Prina communicates her value with behind the scenes and talking head footage on social media. She does this really well on Instagram stories. And yeah, I just saw she was doing some really cool things. I was curious, and I reached out to her for this conversation. If you're a facilitator or someone that wants some fresh ideas for running your workshops, virtual meetings, hop on over to the Flipchart community on Facebook. There's over, I think, 920 facilitators and people doing this from all over the world, asking questions and sharing their ideas, cool tech tips and all of that on there. Also, if you prefer watching videos, I'm uploading all of these conversations onto my YouTube channel. So you can find a link to that, to the flip chart and Prina's contact details. Reach out to her, tell her what you loved about this show in the show notes. You can check that out at firsttimefacilitator.com/episode129. Now, onto the show. I am so excited to welcome to the First Time Facilitator podcast, Prina Shah in Perth, one of my favorite places in the world. Prina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation, Leanne. I'm very excited.
The funny thing about podcasting and having my own show and being the producer of my own show is that from time to time, I just see interesting people doing interesting things. And I think I'd like to get the excuse to talk to them. And this is one of those situations. I think Sabrina and I have been friends on Instagram for a while. We've messaged each other, LinkedIn buddies, and it's like, it's time to take this to the next level. And I thought, what better way than to meet you virtually through the podcast and find out more about what you do? So I guess that's my question. Like, what do you do, Prina? Share it with me and share it with the listeners.
Yeah, okay. What do I do? So I'm a coach, consultant, and a trainer. I support CEOs, leaders, and HR teams, as well as individuals within the workplace, develop their emotional intelligence and their organizational culture. That's me in a snippet. That's my strap line, so to speak. Yes.
It's good that you got that really clear and concise. How long have you been doing that? And how did you sort of discover this? Have you always been interested in people, in making people perform better?
Yeah. Good question. When I was studying from the get-go, I've always been very, very fascinated by the human condition. So I studied a degree in sociology and social psychology and I thought, oh my God, this is fascinating. Ended up in a career within HR and I've had amazing, amazing opportunities within my career. So I started off in the UK in large organizations such as British Telecom, Transport for London, consulting companies as well. And so my background initially was in HR. And then when I transitioned over to my next few roles within the consulting space, it turned more into organizational development. I think you know what that will probably mean, and other HR people listening will know what that means. But for people who don't know what organizational development is, there's two sides to HR. There's generalist HR who, I guess, put the fires out. And then there's organizational development who are more of the proactive change agents who support the people putting the fires out. I landed up in organizational development. I thought, yes, this is my thing. So I'm one of those rare people in HR, Leanne, who has both experiences of generalist HR as well as OD. And I've had the opportunity to lead significant culture change for lots of organizations, which I've been working in internally and now through my own business, supporting organizations as me, which is really cool.
That's so cool. So a couple of things, I guess, yeah, it's funny when people say, oh, you work in the HR team. I'm very quick to say, no, I'm in the learning and development or training and development space because there's a kind of different brands and reputations associated with both of those. So it's good that you differentiated that. And you're very lucky that you've also got that generalist experience. I don't have that. And so, yeah, I remember some conversations in my old jobs where I felt like I was lacking because I didn't have that, you know, the IR, that kind of skill, but kind of navigated around it. So you've got a really interesting status in terms of your employment. So you work internally, but you also have this like alter ego, your own business. You're doing both. That's pretty inspiring for a lot of people listening. There's a lot of people that work full time that want to do what you do, just as a little transition. How are you managing both of those worlds?
Yeah, really well. So you have to be organized. So I'm very lucky. It's quite a rare thing, even in this day and age where, you know, we're talking about flexibility, side gigs, side hustles, all that kind of stuff, to find a role that's part-time, that's okay with you doing your own business on the side as well. So I have an amazing manager who really sees the value in that as well. So how do I manage that myself? I have to be very organized with my 9-to-5 job. So I do that Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Diary management, all of that, keeping my team across everything and communicating a lot just to make sure everyone's across everything. And then with my own business, so Thursday and Friday are my business days, as well as weekends and, you know, evenings, whenever else, you know,
yes,
the score.
I definitely know that, yes.
I try to manage my time effectively. So Thursdays are my big hit days whereby I book in coaching appointments or training appointments, whatever the big ticket item for that week is. Then I need admin time as well. So we've been messaging earlier. I have been doing admin. So Fridays, often I try and keep free, at least Friday afternoon, just to catch up on admin and any appointments I need to book and whatever else admin you have to do, you know, social media management, financial management, all sorts of stuff. Yeah, so it's juggling the both, but juggling it effectively. And then I have my phone is quite my, that's my business as well, you know, Dropbox, Trello, all of those kind of little tools make life so much easier.
Thanks for sharing some of your favorite tech tools. And yeah, we have been joking because we kind of, I'm the same as you. I have to dedicate time. And actually just before this call, I was doing invoices. It felt like the only time during the week where I actually had my head above water. And that admin, it can pile up, right? It can really pile
exactly,
up.
Exactly. And I know I do have a tendency to prioritize the things that I really love compared to Excel spreadsheets and numbers, which I have to do as well. And I do. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's funny that you say that. Makes me, my behavior normalized. Now let's talk about organizational culture change. I mean, that is a big beast, isn't it? Can you share some examples? I mean, where do you even start with, if you get a client or you work internally and they're like, right, we want to set a new culture. How do you even begin?
Yep. So we want to set a new culture. COVID has really made that happen for a lot of organizations. It's imposed culture change on organizations. So if I was to work with a client on culture change, I would probably be meeting with the lead team. So whether it be the CEO, the executives, and I always involve HR as my partners, you know, whatever happens, I always bring HR along. So I will discuss with the executive team the kind of desired culture that they're after and what's lacking at the moment. So a bit of a gap analysis, right? So it's really the first discovery meeting, so to speak, is all about understanding where they're at right now. And then working with the leadership team as well as the HR team to work out what they're desired culture is. So, you know, that's not going to happen overnight. Some organizations want to be innovative. What does that really mean? Mm-hmm. Some organizations want to be achievement focused. Yeah, what does that mean? You know, a lot of organizations have their values and whatnot as well. Are they really being embedded within the business? So I have a lot of conversations and meetings and interactions with my stakeholders at the get-go of a project, if it's a culture change project, to understand where the organization's at. I'm also a big fan of celebrating what's working, because guaranteed, with every organization, there's stuff that's working. Don't break that. Don't change it. It's a good thing. And then with the culture change journey also, you know, once the organization have decided where they want to head and how they want to change the culture, I support them with that either through coaching leaders one-to-one or training programs directly, you know, facilitating culture change in that respect. And it's a long game. So I help with the back end of comms and, you know, pitching everything the right way. Change management is massive as well. So that's, I've got lots of expertise in change management. So I embed that within the project as well. And then it takes time. So I'm with my client all the way through.
Yeah. Amazing. There's a lot of little touch points there. So you're sort of balancing your role between being a consultant versus being the workshop facilitator versus coaching. Like, do you find that you're using a lot of those different mediums to execute on this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the other thing also, one thing about culture change is that the organization, the people, they own the culture, not me. So as great as it is, the organizations enlist the help of consultants. It really has to be brought in by the individuals within the organization and how that's going to happen. That's why I work really closely with HR to understand their pain points as well. So, you know, from a HR perspective, hey guys, what's coming into your inbox? What issues are you having? That's really telling. And then using exit survey data, all of that kind of data to really find out what's happening within the organization and what needs to shift. And then out of that, like you said, Leanne, comes all of the tailored coaching and then tailored training as well to meet their needs.
Nice. Wow. Got so many different, that's cool that you can do all of those things and wear all those hats.
It's huge. It's a good challenge.
It is a good challenge.
Yes.
What I find interesting, I'm interested in culture change. I thought it would be the thing that I would niche down on, but I find it interesting when certainly in organizations where I've been internal, it's like we've got these new values, we get the values out there, we talk about it, and then you still see, particularly from senior leaders, people that we all look up to, not role modeling those behaviors. Things aren't done, it sets a new standard, and it kind of makes the whole experience feel like just fall flat. Honestly, I felt a bit disheartened sometimes because it's like, well, I'm trying to drive this thing. But when you see that, what do we do? Like, how do you navigate that? It's a tough, I'm throwing you a tough question with that.
So culture change or, you know, organizational culture ideally should be led from the top. And, you know, people should be practicing what they're preaching. In the case where they're not and things go really wrong and people act, I guess, against the organization's values or behaviors or whatever that might be, that's where people really need to have adult conversations about, hey, Leanne, you spoke to our client in this manner. That's really against our values. It was inappropriate, whatever it might be. To really address it in a timely manner, because often, you know, in our roles, when we are working within, you know, a salary job, there's stress. There's so much that you have to deliver that you might not be your beautiful, emotional, intelligent self throughout the day. You might just have a trigger and just go and explode. And that's okay. We are humans, you know. So a little compassion there, if, you know, a manager here or there may break. But if it's a consistent thing, that really needs to be addressed internally. Otherwise, it is just lip service. And then the whole of the organization see that and think, oh, yeah, not living to our values, but I have to. Yeah.
It's good that you mentioned compassion, actually. Yeah, because, yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm certainly not perfect. And here I am sort of going on about senior leaders, but I've certainly been, there's been moments in my career where I behaved a certain way or said something or snapped. And who saw that? I don't know. And what impact did that have? In the moment, you're like, yeah, okay. But afterwards, you're like, oh, crap, I shouldn't have done that. How do I rewind this moment?
And that's the thing as well. It happens and it's okay. So from an organizational culture perspective, we all have a part to play with the culture, not just the leaders. Mm. So us as employees as well, that's a big factor. I think that people sometimes forget. And if it is a poor culture, it's like, hey, what can I do about it? So culture change can be led top down or bottom up. I think people forget that bottom up aspect. And that's where I really help a lot of my coaches in that one-to-one space. Like, all right, what change can you make? And Leanne, I don't know, you know, your experience of organizations, there'll be this organizational culture at that umbrella level. Then there'll be these micro cultures, these little subcultures. I think, I want to work with that team. What is it? So people can create their own culture, you know, within.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, even the difference between teams on different levels in the same building, or yes, like the team that's on the other side on the West Wing, like, yeah, they've got a different culture. I wouldn't want to be part of that, but you're absolutely right. And so you think when you try and create a global culture, you're right, it can be the different touch points can happen within those teams. And it really, yeah, I wonder what the difference is. I'm thinking usually it's the people within the team. Really,
yep,
like that personal accountability.
Yeah, people within the team. So within the team level, personal accountability, ownership. And if they've got that buy-in of the organization as well, you know, when people are engaged within an organization. Mm. And then it's the style of leadership of that team's leader as well, and how they're driving it, how they're advocating for the team, how they're advocating for, you know, whatever else is happening in the organization as well.
Like I said, it's a big beast. It's, yeah, awesome that you're doing this work. Now, can we talk a bit about your facilitation style and maybe go back to when you started running workshops? What kind of workshops were you running? What was your confidence level like? How have you progressed and built your facilitation?
Oh my God, I used to be so, so, so nervous with facilitation. Yeah,
trick time
or anything. So actually, when I finished one of my generalist HR jobs, I was the leader of this big not-for-profit HR. And I thought, I'm done with the generalist HR. I want to do something completely different and enhance some of my skills. One of the skills I really wanted to enhance was my presenting and training facilitation style. So I applied for a job at the Chamber of Commerce and Industry in Perth, Western Australia, and I won that role. You know, fake it till you make it. That's what I did pretty much. So the expectation of the role was that I'd be consulting, I'd be facilitating training sessions, I'd be doing workshops, I'd be keynote presenting at conferences.
Wow.
Yes, yes, yes. So my second interview was actually with the general manager, and it was a dry run facilitated training session. And loved it, got the job. I was still nervous though. So I really, for myself, if I'm nervous about something, I have to throw myself in the deep end and just go do it. So that role especially helped me hone my skills in presenting, in the whole facilitating a conversation first off with a client, and then the whole facilitating training, designing training. How do I look at it from that perspective? And then how do I end up, you know, in delivery stage at the end as well? So my facilitation style is very freestyle. I feel like I've honed that skill now. Nice. I'm okay to walk into a room with my slides or whatever ready and feel comfortable to wing it if I have to. And I've had a few instances where I've had to wing it for sure. You know, when technology breaks or
when
the key people aren't there to introduce you, those kind of things.
That whole, like, the show must go on.
Yeah, that's it.
Have you ever had, so it's funny because we've got a mutual friend, Bonnie Robinson. Yes. Yeah. So when you were reflecting on your moment to start facilitating, that my first moment was with Bonnie up in Broome. We just decided that we could run a session on presentation skills for a local shire, and we prepared. It was funny. I think back to that first workshop and gosh, it was a talk fest. We were just pretty much lectures. We were lecturing.
What a difference, eh?
Yeah. What a difference. Yeah. But it's all about, like you said, just throwing yourself in the deep end and trying different things. And as a result, you get more comfortable.
Yes.
Have you ever had a moment in a workshop that hasn't gone so well for you?
Yeah. Those workshops, I had one I can talk to last year. So sometimes I get called in to run workshops last minute when things have gone wrong with teams. So when I consult with my client at that time, I'll find out at a high level what's gone wrong, but I don't want details. I don't want names. I don't want the who's who. For myself as a facilitator, Leanne, I don't know how you are. I like to go in just blind. I don't want to have blah, blah's name in my mind saying, oh, they're the problem person or whatever. So I went in blind to that workshop. I facilitated, it was a team planning day, so more of a strategic planning session for the team. But then there was some behavioral stuff before we got into strategic planning that we needed to discuss. Discussed all of that. And, you know, throughout the day, there's you know, arms crossed, and then there's attitude between people, and you can feel the tension in the room as well. So I'm a big fan of getting into the training session early, meeting people one-to-one first off, so you have that connection with them, and then using my breaks effectively as well. So I ended up for that training session giving far more breaks because of the tension within the room. And if I needed to have any conversations within, you know, the breaks, that's when I would have it. So the way I managed it is just during one of the breaks, talk to some of the people who seemed quite tense to find out what the situation was. Once I understood that, I flipped the style of my workshop to address some of their needs, but then to ensure that it kept on going for the rest of the team as well. Because, you know, when you have one person in a workshop, Leanne, that's just not into it, you can't let that affect the rest of the group. It still has to be that high energy. I still have to deliver, and I've promised to deliver as well, so I need to maintain that. So parking lot, so facilitation 101 is another good one. Parking lot, big butcher's paper, all right. So if people throw grenades here and there, right, good point. Let me take that, and I'll put it on our parking lot. Let's discuss it at the end of the workshop. So those are the kind of tips I have for dealing with uncomfortable situations within workshops. It can be dealt with. And I think as a facilitator, Leanne, also, if we listen in that active listening style especially, you can pick up so much in the room. The unsaid.
Absolutely, yeah. I talked to Jacinta Cubis on a recent show. She does facilitography, and it's all about building your observation skills. And I did one of her workshops, and I was like, wow, I'm seeing things on my street in a completely new light, and how can I bring that into the way that I facilitate? So it's just, yeah, that, like all these different skills that are so important. I mean, I think, like you said, going into new rooms, all that variety, the different audience, the context. Yeah. I think there's probably two schools of camp on that, because I have had facilitators like you, Prina, that say, I don't want to know anything because I don't want to have like a bias or a preconception.
Exactly.
I'm not there yet though. I like love all the detail and like, I want to know as much as I can and lap it up. So I'd love to try that out. And there's some situations like when you keynote speak or whatever, where it's just a broad audience, you don't know. But yes. I love getting a bit of dirt. I don't know. Let's talk about bias actually, because I guess the reason you don't do that is because you don't want to have that bias when you come in. So let's talk about that, because you're doing a lot of work with unconscious bias as well at the moment, I'm seeing.
I am, absolutely. So bias as a facilitator, I'm really, really, really always very mindful of, which is why I never ask for names of problem children, let's call them. And bias within a facilitation element as well, Leanne, I think for myself, I try and eliminate bias in that. I've got a few examples in one of the pieces of work that I'm doing. So as a facilitator, Leanne, you know, there's sometimes always that one person who's the challenge, is asking, oh, what about, or discounting your value, your opinion, whatever it might be. I love those kind of people because they give you extra examples or extra ideas that we may not have considered. So from a bias perspective, I guess rather than hating them as the facilitator, thinking, oh my God, how am I going to deal with this one? I often try and engage a little bit further in conversation with them, because there's something there usually. You know, as a facilitator, we often go in blind, so I don't know what's happening beneath the iceberg. Mm-hmm. So poking or prodding those people respectfully to find out what's really happening, that's gold. So I love a good challenge in a workshop where people are challenging me back. That's where I think the rich conversation comes as well. Often.
Yeah, it often does come off something that is provocative and not something that everyone can just accept and nod about. It's got to be, oh, that's an interesting comment.
Yeah.
And I can't even think of the word now. When someone's not ambivalent, I think is the word. I'd rather work with someone that is actually has an opinion.
Yeah.
But that's probably my own bias as well. I mean, and that's what I'm comfortable with. And I think this is the thing about facilitation, and a lot of people that are really experienced facilitators still come on this show and say, I'm still learning, I'm still growing, because
absolutely.
It's just, yeah.
Every facilitation is so different. You don't know what you're going into as much as, you know, you're planned and prepared. You don't know what's happened with people during that day. You don't know what's going to happen with yourself that day. I remember, gosh, long ago, I've been following your post for a while. You put something about you were traveling at that time and there was something that happened with your shirt. I think you didn't iron it. And you're like, okay, got to fix it. So do you want to talk about that example? I think we just have to wing it, don't we?
Yeah. So, I mean, like it was down the Gold Coast. It was one of my first gigs out of corporate, left my job. A week later, I was running this two-day retreat, which was amazing. I couldn't believe it. Beautiful Gold Coast. Yeah. And so the next morning, I had a really crazy night, good sleep, like took my time in the morning. I was like, yeah, everything's great. Then I was like ironing my shirt and I realized I was this massive, I don't know what had happened. It just had torn. Then I had to like, pick a new, because I had to like revamp the whole outfit because it was dependent on that top. And then, what do I wear? And then it just put me under immense pressure. So the time I get there, I'm like sweating, you know, it was like this really steady morning and it just, yes, that's why one of my first rules in facilitation is iron your shirt the night before. It's like a metaphor for like just get everything prepared the night before.
Yeah. And as a facilitator, winging it in that manner, so with your own material, you know, going over and beyond, so you're prepared, you've got everything, you've got extra everythings as well. You're covered that way. But then during the day, you don't know what's going to happen. And I like that. I like that aspect of, you know, walking into a room and you don't know how it's going to go. Generally, it goes well so far from my experience. Yeah. But I like that excitement of facilitating and not knowing how the workshop's going to go, having an idea of what the outcomes I want are, but going with the flow during the day.
That's it's good that you respond to that, because I think there's a lot of people that would love to be in what we do in facilitation, but they just, that unexpected thing like will drive, like they wouldn't be able to handle that. I feel like it maybe attracts a certain type of person who, because I mean, there's certainly been experiences where I have woken up and gone, is this really what I want to do? Because it is so unpredictable and there's a lot of uncertainty. And I think it goes back to everything I'm learning from this show about some preventative strategies to get people feeling in like that rewarded state when they walk in and not feeling threatened, all that prevention stuff. Yes. It's really important. So like in terms of your personal preparation, I love that you pack extras. That's so cool. No one's ever said that before. Yeah, extras. That's so true. Like how else do you prepare? Like maybe like the night before or the morning of, to get yourself in that, you know, energetic state where you need to be?
Oh, yes. I'm a meditator. So I need to meditate. I just need that clear mind. So meditation has to happen. Lots of water as well. And then in terms of preparation, I like to get there early, like most facilitators, get there early, ensure that prior, a week or two prior, that my slides are already or my materials already, including whatever extra I need to bring. And then during the day also, you know, as people walk through the room, just keeping in mind and engaging with them as soon as they walk through the room. I think as a facilitator, our role is so important in making people feel welcome and safe as soon as they're within our space that we've created.
It's so true. I ran these workshops last year and they kicked off at 9 o'clock, which is pretty late. Usually in Australia, we start off early, but they started at 9. But people were arriving, like I was getting into the room about 7:30 and people were already there. And that struck, like I hated that because it was like they were watching me set up and I didn't have that time. Yeah. So I think I read somewhere, someone was talking about having like, they send people out to a waiting room or do something else. And yeah, because I agree with you. I love getting in early and having that me time and then switching the focus to someone else.
And then at the end of the workshop, what I always, always do now is I'll finish early. So half an hour early or whatever, people think, yes, you know, so that's a big win. So
that's so cool.
Time management is a big thing. But because I'm finishing half an hour early, I also say, I'm here, I'm hanging around. Come talk to me one-to-one if you have any questions or comments or if you want to learn more. And that's where often if I'm dealing with more of the difficult cultural workshops, culture change workshops, where people don't feel comfortable talking, in that last half an hour or during the breaks, Leanne, that's when people come and talk to me one-to-one. That space especially is really important to have for the quiet people in the workshops. So talking about bias again, you know, there'll be the loud people that talk and there may potentially be groupthink as well. And as a facilitator, you don't want to say, Leanne, you're being really quiet. Do you want to talk now? You don't want to pick on people that way, but there's other ways during breaks and especially after the session also, getting people's feedback and opinions.
Yeah, I love that lingering time. And I feel like, honestly, that's something I'm probably missing from Zoom calls.
Oh, yes.
You know, like I had a call yesterday and it finished on the hour. And then I was like, oh, look, I'll just hang out and just talk to people, you know, for 10 minutes or so while everyone leaves. And that was really nice. But it still feels like the second you hit, because people are still talking and waving and you're hitting end meeting and it just stops. Yeah, that linger time. The other thing you brought up about breaks. So because I am pretty high energy facilitator, I will move the energy. Like I'm not going to be like crazy all day, but it, you know, oscillate. Contrast is a big thing I talk about. Then during the breaks, I really need to like go to the bathroom, refill my water bottle, like just do my own sort of self-care work. And I find it really hard to balance that with talking. I want to talk to people. I know I need to have to, but it's like, hang on, just give me 10 minutes to sort myself out. Like, how do you manage both of those worlds? Are you the same?
Yeah, completely. And one tip I have learned is give the group an activity before the break, give them 5 minutes or whatever, during which time I'll pop out to the loo, top up my water, whatever else, and then come back for the break. So I've had my break by then. Their turn.
Super clever. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
That's something to incorporate into my design. Like where the breaks, okay, get an activity where they'll be so absorbed they won't realize that I'm outside. That's awesome. So advice for first-time facilitators, if you had to talk to yourself and give yourself some advice when you were first starting, what do you think you'd say?
Yeah, just do it. That's a good one. Throw yourself in the deep end. It's okay, because really, what's the worst case scenario? Really, what is going to go wrong? We're not brain surgeons. We're not operating on people. You know, it's not a life and death situation. So do it. The other big, big thing I have learned also is be yourself. People come to you for your personality, for your style, for whatever you bring to these workshops. So, and that takes time as well. It's taken me time to work out who I am and what my facilitation style is. So, whilst you can be prepared, do all of that, there may be nerves as well. I think nerves are pretty good, Leanne. I don't know about you, but a little bit of adrenaline, that's a good thing. Yeah. So, nervous excitement is what I call it. That's okay. And then as a first-time facilitator, remember your personality. Remember to be yourself rather than sticking to the slides or whatever content you have to have. Because once people connect, facilitation is all about connection, whether it be through coaching, consulting or training, right? It's that connection that people want.
Yeah, I was having a conversation, I can't even remember, it was earlier this week, just reflecting on a story when I was in Hong Kong last year running some programs. And at the end of it, one guy gave me feedback and he was like, oh, my favorite part of that whole 3 days is when you stuffed up that story on what I stuffed up. Like I didn't have the data or I just couldn't tell the story well. It was just kind of failed. He goes, because that was the first time like it wasn't perfect or professional. It was like you actually showed who you really were, had a laugh at yourself. And I was thinking, oh gosh, I wish I did that on day one. But you're right. I think we do put a lot of pressure on ourselves to like nail the content and be professional and have all the extras and everything ready to go. But people actually connect with that whole, actually they do stuff up, they make mistakes, they're human. Yeah, that's really interesting.
And you do have to freestyle in a workshop also because you're going to get people coming up with something that you don't know about. So be prepared for that. Yeah. And I guess because I've had a lot of experience now as well, I've got analogies or I've got life experience or I can chuck a story here or there and relate to the person by summarizing or paraphrasing, whatever it might be, and just bringing them within the journey.
I love that. I love that you say that because usually when I think of my toolkit, it's like, oh, the next sort of icebreaker activity, but you're like metaphor, analogies, stories
yeah,
are awesome to have. That's yeah. really cool. I've got to say, if you are listening to this, you got to follow Prina on Instagram, because we were just talking about bringing in personality and uniqueness, and you're on there all the time, like sharing your story and talking to camera.
Yep.
And I think it's something that's worth following. If you're trying to figure out, you know, where you are, where you stand, what your facilitation style is, follow Prina and just see what she's doing on there. Because that's how this whole conversation happened, because I've connected with you because of your stories, right?
It's
sparked some curiosity. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Rather than just a name and a photo, it's like, oh, I'd love to chat to you.
Yeah.
So about, go.
Thank you. I was going to say, in relation to Instagram, I use that as my playground, and LinkedIn is more my office, is how I like to liken it. Yeah, absolutely. So for anything behind the scenes, Instagram is your place.
You're throwing in another analogy there. So well done.
There you go. Boom.
Yeah. If our listeners would love to follow more of your work, find out more about you, connect with you, should we send them to the playground, the office? Where should we send them?
Instagram and LinkedIn. They're my main areas. Yeah, that I'm on.
Awesome. And we'll throw a link to that and your website in the show notes as well.
Yep.
Beautiful. Yeah. Prina, it's been a delight chatting to you today and hearing I love the practical stuff that you shared, as well as your whole philosophy around creating organizational change and like sort of chunking it down, but also exploring all the different mediums. We're talking on the show to facilitators, but people are also consultants, coaches, and we also have to wear those hats at different stages. So
completely. We don't facilitate in just training. We facilitate in life.
Mm.
Really, there's so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. Conversations at restaurants when you can't get what you want. Prina, it's been a delight. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you, Leanne.
Hey, thanks so much for sticking around. You've reached the end of another episode of the First Time Facilitator podcast. Connect with the show at firsttimefacilitator.com or follow me on Instagram at Leanne Hughes to find out what I'm up to during the week. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it with someone who will also appreciate the insight, and make it easier for yourself and subscribe to the show in your podcast player of choice. Thank you so much for listening, and chat to you next week.